This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast. Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our regular opportunity to get together as blind and partially sighted people and explore the world of technology. You can first catch us each Tuesday lunchtime from 1 or shortly after as a podcast. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your programme and we're always delighted to hear from you. You can get in touch via email. It's the usual address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Alan Russell, guide dog user, explores how close are we as blind people to being guided by robots. Callum Stoneman catches up with the developer of this so-called AI screen reader, Type Ahead. And Hubert returns with part 6 in his regular series, Getting to Grips with VoiceOver on iPhone. Welcome in, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich. Good to have your company. Let's come to each of you and find out what's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this week. Hubert, what's on your mind?
For me, Apple Music Replay. So this is the feature that gives you some listening stats for the year and a playlist of kind of your most played tracks of the year. And the latest development on that feature is that you can actually get some monthly listening stats. So if you're into looking at your listening trends and music trends and listening habits like I am, it's quite interesting. You can look at your top albums, artists, and even music monthly milestones. It's still a web-based experience, so it's not in the music app, but it's a nice little addition to the replay feature, which, well, I quite like in general because I'm really into looking at my music trends and how they change and develop.
That sounds quite cool, actually.
Spotify have been doing this, haven't they, for a bit?
Yeah, Spotify have been doing this for years. Apple Music has kind of jumped onto that train about 2019, and they slowly are adding to the kind of Apple Music replay feature.
Dare we ask what you're listening to?
I mean, I my music taste is all over the place. Dance music, electronic dance music is probably my preferred genre, but honestly, these days I tend to listen to pretty much anything.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, people always said that. I listen to anything, and then you put something on, they go, oh, I don't really like this.
Oh, yeah, not that.
Not that. Callum, what's happening with you?
Well, this isn't really anything new as such, but I'm starting to look more and think about these smart glasses that we seem to be hearing a lot about. Obviously, we've had Envision have been around for years, but I'm hearing a lot of talk about Celeste lately as well, who are doing their own version of smart glasses. I think fairly similar to Envision, similar in terms of features, but they've got a lot more, or they're at least going to have a lot more AI features in them and at quite a lower cost as well. And for me, these have always been everything that these glasses offer, you can do with something like seeing AI. But I think this is going to be the year where these really take off. I mean, if you could have, you can already get Aira on the Envision glasses with some limitations. For example, they can't see your location from, you know, GPS. But if you can have a mixture of, like, you know, Aira, Be My AI, things like that on these wearables. I've been saying this for a while, but it seems like it's a bit more possible now. So I'm interested to see where that goes. Very tempted to look into Celeste because they do a subscription model, which is, I don't want to say affordable at $50 a month. So what's that, about £30 a month, something like that. But it's a lot more affordable than these have ever been, this type of product.
Mm. Yeah, interesting one to watch. I've been worrying a bit about managing screen time at home. We heard last week about policies where schools are concerned, banning use of phones in schools. And I'm not sure about all-out banning. You know, I always think when you ban something, you almost make it more attractive. But then at the same time, am I as a parent getting the balance right with my son? You know, he does do quite a lot of screen time between various social media platforms, gaming, and obviously he has to use technology for school, right? And, you know, he's fairly active. He does theatre and athletics. Being in the news, back in the news, just got me wondering whether I've got the balance right. Should I be stricter? Should I be more relaxed? I'd be interested to hear from parents how you are managing screen time with your kids, and if you've got any tips about doing that in an accessible way. You know, I can see like his YouTube history and stuff like that, so I'm not really worried that he's watching anything untoward. It's just more the quantity. How do you know when you've got that quantity right? I suppose if it has a detrimental impact in other aspects of your life, if you're tired or you find it difficult to establish relationships and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm just mulling that over, and I'd be keen to hear what you think.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, iOS and Android both have brilliant inbuilt screen time features, and all of them are accessible, certainly on iOS. I imagine they are on Android as well. But one thing that I've learned from talking to parents is that the kids are often smarter than us at finding the way around the restrictions. You know, you've set the passcode, but they'll find a way around it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that restrictions is really the answer, right? I think you've got to have conversations. It's about education, teaching your kids to take responsibility and to understand when it is time to step away, you know, for them to recognize the signs and the signals. That's how you prepare them, because you're not always going to be there, right? Later in life, you can't always look over their shoulder and go, well, you've been on that too long or whatever, right? You've got to educate them about, you know, what's a healthy use of technology and when is it time to put it down and go off and do something else. Let us know what's on your technology radar, what's in your tech in tray, what's grabbing your attention from the world of technology. Have you made a little discovery, something old, something new? Do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, Hubert, thanks a lot. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
A little while ago, I was at Glasgow University and had a walk with a robotic guide. Now, to tell us more, we have Professor Wasim Ahmed and Dr. Ola, who are going to tell us all about the project. Thank you very much for joining us. It's quite an exciting stage now.
Absolutely, Alan. Thank you very much for having us. We did our first evaluation with you and several other participants back in January 2022 at Fourth Valley Sensory Center, where we brought our Pepper humanoid robot and several people, blind and visually impaired, and technologists gave it a go. So I think that was an eye-opening event for us in terms of the acceptability and also the response we received from your community. It was really game changer for us, and since then it has been very positive and very engaging. So we have been working with both RNIB and Fourth Valley Sensory Center and their participants over the last 2 years trying to develop this technology. So we looked at the dog robot that we had in our lab, and we thought that will be interesting if we try to replicate the system from humanoid robot to the guide dog or a dog robot. It has been, and it looks quite promising. So the current state of the technology is that we have three main feature which we integrated into the Robby robotic guide dog. One is ability to learn the environment, the map out that environment, and then in a real time when the blind or visually impaired person wants to go from A to B, it can plan the path and can take the person safely and correctly. The second integrated technology is try to avoid the static obstacles and the dynamic, the moving objects, which are mostly more unpredictable. It can avoid that as well. The third and very important technology we integrated in there is the vision part. So the Robby, the robotic dog, can actually see in terms of through the cameras, and it can understand and recognize the environment and also recognize the objects. So it can describe the object to the person. It can read writing and the labels from the object. So that's very handy when it comes to trying to explain different things, such as the experience in the Interior Museum. The last but very important as well feature is the audio interactivity. So in that part, we managed to integrate the large language models into the system where Robby, the robotic guide dog, can explain the environment and also can interact with the user. So user can ask generic question and also could ask a very specific question related to the visit, like the experience we had it in Hunterian Museum, where they could ask about the artifacts in front of them.
We also have with us Dr. Ola, who's also involved with the project. A really complex piece of engineering here. We think about the simple task of us just moving around and avoiding obstacles and finding our way. How complicated is it to do something like this with a robot like Robby?
I'll start with the famous Newton quotes. We stand on the shoulders of giants. The theory has been on for decades, actually. However, the theory's limitation is key, and that's where we are building this technology from. GPS is the fundamental theory with which this works. It's used for navigation and for guidance. However, despite the advances in GPS technology, there is this drawback with indoor scenarios. GPS will not work in indoor locations. Consequently, we had to design a new type of localization technology. By localization, I mean the technology with which a robot will be able to find itself. We developed our own simultaneous localization and mapping algorithms where a robot can learn an indoor space. It will mimic the way humans learn indoor spaces. The way if I walk into a building that I have no previous understanding about, I have to read the signs. And by reading the sign, I'll have to learn where to go. And that's exactly how this robot works. It goes into an unknown space. It reads the signs. We call that process mapping. Then it relies on that knowledge to navigate that space safely. However, the indoor environment is also dynamic, meaning that people could be walking across hallways. People could be walking, you could shift a table or a chair from one point to another after it has done its mapping. And that is what we have also included in this new technology. It dynamically learns about its environment. So if there are these changes, it takes them on board and updates its map. And also, it has a real-time obstacle avoidance algorithm in such a way that even if the map is not updated, it will still avoid collisions with new obstacles in the environment.
When I walked with the dog, it was really unusual because it almost walked like a dog. You know, you don't have the wheels and it was guiding me around obstacles. I could ask it questions. To get to that kind of stage has obviously taken a great deal of time. Safety, I suppose, must be hugely paramount. You know, that must be the sort of overriding thing here. And having a machine which people will put their trust in, do you think that could be quite tricky?
It is indeed. We have been asking to ourselves, and we also raised the same question to our participants. And they said the trust-wise out of 10, they can trust our technology or Robby in the range of 6 to 9, which was very surprising to us. And we had an incident even in the live demo when one of the blind person was using that robot dog, one of our technical assistant suddenly came in front of the robot and robot managed to avoid it. It was so sudden that we thought it's going to hit, but it still managed to avoid the collision, rerouted the whole thing. Was amazing. So that was very comforting. However, we want to make sure that when people are putting their trust into such a technology, it is kind of a very much reliable. It's more than it's a safety. It's critical, very critical. But of course, we need to make it foolproof before we are ready to give it to the end user.
Ola, what was it like watching people walk round with Robby?
We spent years developing this technology. So although as engineers in the lab, we were able to test and try to ascertain how usable this technology would be, that does not in any way compare to seeing it used live by the participants during the trials. And it was the dream come true. It was excellent seeing them being able to navigate an unknown space, and more importantly, experiencing the Hunterian Museum.
You remember maybe the story we heard back in January 2022 from one of the participants. So he was mentioning that he went to grocery store and he always used to pick up a can of beans from certain place, and he went there, but actually they changed the place, and he, when he reached home, he realized that it was not what he wanted to take it. So I thought, you know, we need to have that capability with the use and with the availability of AI technology and the machine vision, that the robot should be able to see and translate or read out such kind of things to the user. And again, if you are visiting an art gallery or a museum, instead of relying on a person, I thought it will be more appropriate that you are self-reliant and you rely on your assistive technology. And I can see that it will have a lot of potential when it will be deployed in the shopping center, in supermarkets, where Robbie can take them, read out the labels, for example, any allergy problems, the freshness of the fruit or vegetables and all these kind of things. And if they are going to the airport, then they can read terminal gate number, the counter and such kind of information, very basic information, which is very crucial, very important to the user.
Ola, AI is obviously going to be a huge game changer, especially in terms of interactivity and the speed which the robot can react to things. The robot actually walks like a dog. Have you tried it on stairs yet, or is that another stage to come?
The reason we moved from wheeled robots to quadrupeds, four-legged robots, is because of this feature. It wants to be able to maneuver staircases and go up and down floors. But in its current form, that feature is not yet complete on the robot, and it's something that is yet to come in the near future.
Something to look forward to there, Ola. Just finally, Wasim, what stage are we at the moment with Robbie, and where are you looking to take this? Because this is an ongoing piece of work.
Absolutely. This is a very important as well as exciting project for us and for our participant and user. And we want to take it within a year to a museum, and people come and can use it straight away or in a similar setting. And in a longer run, of course, we want to see it rolling out to major such kind of service industry as well as to individual if they want to take it to their home and their indoor and outdoor spaces and navigation. We are keen and we are working on the business model. Technology is almost there, if not 100%, 80% ready. We are not here to gain big profits and make money. We want to make it happen in a sense that it is viable for all parties. It's viable for people to use it. It's viable for the business to buy it and let it use for the blind and partially sighted community, as well as physically challenged people. And for us, it will be a win-win situation if we can make it viable.
A hugely exciting project. I'm certainly looking forward to catching up with you a bit further down the road and having a walk with Robbie again. But for the moment, to Wasim and to Ola, thanks to both of you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan, and also your input is very important for us.
Thanks, Alan. And we've really enjoyed the valuable support from RNIB in developing this project. And we hope we can continue to count on your support when we want to do next trials.
Alan Russell there, speaking with the developers of Robbie, a potential robot guide dog. Now, Callum, you used to have a guide dog. Hubert, you've got a guide dog. Just share some thoughts, if you would, about how you would feel being guided by a robot.
I mean, this is so tough. I mean, in some ways, is it more reliable than a dog? You know, the guide dogs aren't perfect. They do get distracted. I mean, my dog was always after food. You know, that was her weakness. If there was any food around, she would try and scavenge. And that was for me to be aware of. But I don't know. I don't think I would ever go for one of them. I mean, well, no, I'll rephrase that. Never say never, right? But for me, it was about more than being guided. It was, you know, getting around. It was about the companionship as well that you build up, you know, that partnership and that trust. And I think having a guide dog, I don't want to get too deep into this, but yeah, you're right. I used to have a guide dog up until last year. I'm now waiting for my second one. I got her when I was really young, and it changed me as a person as well, you know, as well as giving me so much freedom and independence. It actually, I think it caused me to grow up quite a lot because I had to.
Hubert, you've recently qualified with CESAR. How would you feel about being guided by a robot?
It's an interesting one because, don't get me wrong, I'm glad to see these sorts of technologies being invented and being created. But, I mean, depends which way you look at it. I guess having a robot guide dog, yes, you don't have to worry about, you know, taking the dog out for a spend, groom them and all that, and the emotional side of things. However, like Callum says, I think the companionship aspect is important. I mean, you know, yes, Caesar's weakness is food as well. Anything food related, he'll be after it, or a dog. he's always wanting to play. So, you know, there'll be certain times when things aren't perfect. More often than not, they are. But you also get that companionship element, which I think you're not going to get with a robot. I mean, let's be honest, you might get something that might try and reflect that experience and replicate it, but it's not going to be the same. Like Callum, I wouldn't say that I'll never consider that and never look into it. I can't say that. But for me and my experience, I think having my guide dog in certain ways does change. And in certain ways, I can see why a robot guide dog would be different and in certain ways better, in certain ways not. But I don't know. I still feel we are a way away from being guided by robots efficiently enough to consider it instead of an actual guide dog, maybe.
Yeah, well, there are potential benefits, of course, for somebody who would struggle looking after a living dog. You know, it might be an appropriate option for them. We talked about the Sony Aibo, which was a companion dog a while ago here on Tech Talk. Also, we heard there in the interview, you know, if you went to a museum, for example, if the dog was, you know, sufficient, if the robot, I should say, was sufficiently well programmed and developed, potentially it could offer you additional information, right? You know, your guide dog, your organic guide dog, isn't going to read signage or the menu and stuff like that. What do you think about that, Callum?
Yeah, that is the areas where I think there are definitely benefits. I mean, like you said, there's some people who can't look after a dog for whatever reason. There's some people who are allergic, or some people who just don't want dogs. You know, you might want the freedom and the independence that a guide dog gives you, but not want the responsibility of a dog, you know, and that's perfectly fine. There can be all sorts of reasons for that. And yeah, something that could guide you and read signs or tell you where doors are or tell you what room you're walking into, what your surroundings are like. Yeah, I could see the benefits there. But it's just, you know, how far away from that are we for that to actually be a reality and to be reliable? I worry a little bit about support as well. You know, how long will these things be supported? Are you going to be in a rush just about to set off somewhere and then suddenly, oh, hang on a minute, my dog needs a software update,
you know,
yeah. Sort of thing.
You got to upgrade the operating system.
Yeah. I mean, guide dogs, you know, real dogs, they quite often, this isn't always the case, but they quite often work for, you know, 8, sometimes even 10 years. Is a robot, you know, is technology going to last that long? And then how much would it be to get the new one? And all those sorts of things to think about. I can definitely see the pros, but I don't know. It still feels quite a way off yet.
This one's going to run, I think. We're going to hear a lot more about this in the coming months and years. I don't think anybody at this point is being asked to have their dog replaced, but it
No.
potentially is another option in the future.
Yeah, and I don't think we ever will as well. I think there's this fear about, oh, you know, well, we won't have guide dogs anymore. It'll all be robots. I don't think we will ever get to that point.
No. No, and people like have pet dogs anyway, right? You know, lots of people enjoy that company. And I look after a retired guide dog, and I enjoy taking him out for a walk. He comes and nudges me if he thinks I've been on Tech Talk for too long. So, yeah, let us know what you think. Would you trust a robot to guide you? What are your questions, concerns? Share that with us, and we'll try and get you some answers if we can. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks again.
Now, we're all familiar by now with the use cases of AI and some of the functions that we've got from things like ChatGPT to help us look things up and answer questions and summarise documents or emails. And in the case of Be My Eyes and Envision and other apps out there, other assistive apps help us describe images. But what if AI could actually do things for you? If you could tell it what you want to do in an app or on a website, on your computer, for example, and it could go off and do what you need to do rather than you having to navigate through a clunky website or app or an interface that's not quite accessible. Well, that seems like the natural next step for AI. And one guy who's had this idea and has even made it a reality is Jeff Harrer, the developer of Type Ahead for the Mac. And he joins me now. Jeff, thanks for coming on. Welcome to Tech Talk.
Hi, Callum. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Let's get right into it. I tried to describe Type Ahead on the show a couple of weeks ago when I'd first heard about it and started playing with it. And I don't think I did a very good job, to be honest. So let's hear it from you. What is Type Ahead?
No, I heard the segment. I thought it was great, actually. But I would say that Type Ahead is an AI-powered assistive technology for the blind and the visually impaired. And our mission is to make computers more accessible. And so the way that this works is it's a desktop application that you would download from the internet. And you can activate it and ask it to do something for you. For example, you know, search for Valentine's gifts on Amazon. And what it'll do is it'll look at what's on the screen. And using ChatGPT, it's going to decide what buttons it has to click or what text it needs to type in order to fulfill your request. So at a super high level, I think that this is a natural language interface for your computer.
So how is this actually working? Is this using, because you said it's using ChatGPT, but is this essentially like taking a screenshot, like sending a screenshot of the page, or is it analyzing, like in a web page, for example, is it getting in and sort of analyzing the code of the page, or is it doing kind of really advanced, essentially image recognition and OCR?
It's a little bit of all of them, I think. Basically, the big thing that I'm doing is I'm integrating ChatGPT with the low-level accessibility APIs of your computer. So whether it's a Windows machine or a Mac, they'll expose these accessibility APIs. And that's really what VoiceOver is doing when you move it around. It's accessing this API and moving the cursor. And what I'm doing instead is I'm basically giving ChatGPT the power to look at what are all the different accessible things on the page and then deciding from there what it needs to click on. And sometimes having the screenshot helps give it more context, and sometimes things aren't super accessible to begin with. So I think that's where the OCR and the image recognition comes in. But I would say the core technology is the integration of ChatGPT with the low-level accessibility APIs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. I'm interested in the background of this, because you mentioned on your Apple Viz forum post when you introduced this, you mentioned that you're fully sighted. So for you as a sighted developer, why did you decide to develop something that can help blind or partially sighted people? Like, where does that interest in accessibility come from?
When I quit my job in December, one of the first things I started doing was to go to networking events and meetups to just try to talk to people in different industries and learn about potential ideas for how I could apply AI. And I think to my surprise, I was met with a lot of resistance. And I think part of it could have been because the more I tried to probe into, you know, people's pain points and how people work day to day, I think the more it kind of just seemed like I was asking people like, hey, can I automate you? And I don't think anybody wants to be automated. But I guess in that process, one of the groups that I ended up meeting was the Lighthouse for the Blind in Seattle, which is a nonprofit. And when I pitched them this idea of an AI-powered screen reader, they were really enthusiastic about the concept. And so that's kind of why I ended up posting on applevis.com. And I got a whole bunch of people like commenting and emailing me with different ideas and bug reports and stuff like that. And I took that as a sign that people really wanted this thing. There was really demand for this product. So that's kind of what made me interested in it. And so it does kind of seem like a little bit random in some ways, but I think that it's a really important problem to try to solve. And the more I learn about it, the more it seems like this has to be done by somebody.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it is interesting because we're certainly, I don't think anyone's complaining. I think the more interesting accessibility, the better. But I think a lot of sighted people, I mean, I still meet sighted people on a daily basis who are surprised that you can even use an iPhone or a Mac or a Windows computer, let alone suddenly kind of coming and developing something like this, which is, I think it could be incredibly useful. I mean, what are some of the long-term aims for this? We're in the early days at the minute, but from initial playing around with it and when it does work, it's pretty impressive. I think of, for example, not just blind people, but people who are new to computers, for example. You know, do you see a different audience for it going forward as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the short term, this could expand into adjacent markets. For example, people with motor disabilities or people who are elderly. Basically, people who just need a more accessible computer, right? But I think focusing on the blind and the visually impaired just from the start is a really interesting design constraint, because if it works, that means you kind of have this way to control a computer without having to see the screen. And if you can do that, I think that it could have a ton of mainstream appeal if you can schedule tasks, for example, to execute while you're commuting or, while you're out and about. And you don't have to be in front of your computer in order to use your computer, which I think would unlock all sorts of different opportunities. I think it's a long way to get there. And I think I don't want to like trip over my shoelaces to get to that yet. But that's kind of what I have in mind for the long term.
I've got to ask this question about privacy, because I think if I don't, then we'll get emails. Mm-hmm. But we're all slightly concerned about privacy with AI. You know, first it was, okay, we're asking questions, we're chucking code into it, and then it was, we're giving it all these images. And now it's actually controlling our system, and we're potentially entering a lot of info into it, as well as giving it access to what's on our screens. So what are the privacy implications of using something like Type Ahead and other similar products? I mean, are there some things that maybe we shouldn't use it for?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I was describing before, what Type Ahead's going to do is it takes a snapshot basically of your main application, and it processes that through ChatGPT. So the data is going to OpenAI, and OpenAI's policies state that they don't train on this data. They don't train on API data, but I would say to please use this at your own risk. Like I would not use it for super sensitive data, whether it's like passwords or maybe bank information. And at one point I was trying to support offline models, but I did put that on pause to focus on the Windows development. So I think that, it is still new and there are definitely risky applications of it still, but I think that everything here is a trade-off, I think.
I think you might have just hinted at something there. Does that mean there's a Windows version in development as well? Because this is macOS only at the minute, just to be clear.
Yeah, but, that's right.
So you're developing for Windows as well, eh?
I am, yeah. One of the biggest pieces of feedback that I got is that most blind people tend to use Windows and really like using JAWS. So I am currently trying to work on a Windows version of this idea that integrates with JAWS and NVDA. And so, yeah, if people are interested, I'd be happy to let them know more about it as things develop.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting because I kind of had the impression, one of the ways I tried to describe this to somebody was it's a bit like Windows Copilot, but for the Mac.
Right, right.
But I would kind of say it's a little bit more ahead than Copilot. I mean, Copilot's brilliant, but in terms of controlling the system, it doesn't feel like it can really do that much at the minute. You know, it can turn on dark mode, it can open a couple of apps. It kind of feels like about it from my experience.
Mm-hmm. I haven't had the opportunity to try it myself. So I can't say for certain, but I think it's anybody's game right now. Like, it doesn't matter how big you are, or how small you are. I think like everyone knows that this North Star is to build Jarvis or HAL or, name your AI friend. But I think like it's such an exciting time to be working in this space, because you can really build really cool things without a ton of human labor, I think.
Yeah, well, that's kind of one of my next questions, which was, there's a lot of arguments of, there seems to be no in between sometimes with some people. It's either AI is going to cause us to lose all our jobs and it's going to get smarter than us and it's going to kill us all, or it's going to be the best thing we've ever known. I mean, Might be an obvious answer given what you've developed, but where do you sit on the kind of AI argument in general?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting question for me because when I was in college, I studied computer science and philosophy at Stanford. And so a lot of the conversations that we have in our philosophy classes were around, you know, the limits of AI and how you measure consciousness and how you measure intelligence. And all of those conversations that we're having in our philosophy classes are relevant today in the CS world. I guess the way that I think about this, if I try to like think ahead 5 years, I think that AI is going to become a commodity like electricity. You're just going to pay your AI bill and, you know, have access to this. And I'm kind of picturing that there's probably going to be maybe 10 to 20 AI providers that all let you access, you know, fast and cheap and smart AI APIs. And I think it will probably disrupt the job market quite a bit, but these things do tend to take time. So I wouldn't kind of expect an overnight change, basically. I think in terms of, you know, how this is going to impact people, yes, things will change from the jobs perspective, but I think it's kind of a double-edged sword because if AI labor becomes cheaper, yes, businesses are going to, you know, cut costs in different areas, but it also enables people at the individual level to have access to labor in ways that they otherwise weren't able to. So to give an example, for me personally, to build this app, I had to write it in a language called Swift for the Mac version and C# for the Windows version. But professionally in my career, I was only working on the back end of things. So I had never touched those programming languages before. So when I was first starting out, I would basically talk to ChatGPT every day and say like, here's the high level sketch of what I'm trying to do, write me the code for it. And I could like iterate with ChatGPT in that way. And I think it's just like a new way to learn information. It's a new way to become, you know, 10 times more productive than you normally are. So I think that it could, just as much it'll help businesses, it'll also help individuals. I guess that's my overall opinion.
I think I'm kind of similar. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything, isn't there? I mean, I'm using things like Be My AI on a daily basis and, you know, ChatGPT especially to, as I said in the intro there, you know, summarize information, summarize documents. I mean, it's one of them where you kind of wonder how you manage without it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to TypeEd then. It is kind of early days. I think we need to be clear on that. You know, it's not at the point yet, in the nicest way possible, it's not at the point where it can kind of do everything for you in the way that we'd like it to. But what are some of the things for now? You know, what can it do? What's a little bit too advanced for it at the minute? You know, if people are looking to try this out, what are the expectations at the minute, do you think?
Yeah, so there are three main features. The first is this autopilot functionality that I was trying to describe, where you can just give it a high-level task and it'll try to execute multi-step processes. And then there's a focus function where you can tell your type ahead to set the focus onto some element. So this is useful if perhaps you go to a website that you haven't been to before and you don't know how certain buttons are labeled. You can just kind of tell it at a high level, like, hey, I'm trying to access my settings, and it'll know to focus the voiceover cursor onto the right element. And there's another feature that I'm calling Smart Vision, where it will take a screenshot of whatever's currently under your voiceover cursor, and you can ask it questions about what you've highlighted. Again, that's useful for if you go to a new page or a new app that you don't know how things are laid out, you can kind of just ask it for a lay of the land. Or you could use it for images that might not have alt text, or maybe you just want to get further information about what you're seeing. So those are the three main functionalities that I'm trying to build out right now. I think where things can get dicey is on the autopilot side of things. If you try to give it something that's too complex or that's too ambiguous, it tends to screw up. And I know that there's some cases where it'll kind of fall into like a little death loop where it'll think it did something, but it didn't quite do it, so I'll try it again. So those are all the types of things that I'm trying to, you know, get around to fixing. But yeah, I'm largely kind of working off of user feedback. So when people say like, hey, I'm having a problem, then I'll try to go in and try to fix it to the best of my ability.
Yeah, and I guess that's the key thing, isn't it? You need that user feedback because, I mean, it's hard in any kind of software development. You know, normally you develop a program and it does the one thing and that's what people use it for. Whereas this, I guess you can't really predict what people are going to do with it.
Yeah, it's very horizontal, and so there are usage patterns that I've seen. Like, I think a lot of people in the blind community are very involved with music, so people try to use it for applications like Logic and GarageBand to, tune different settings without having to go through the menu bars, which I think is really cool.
And do you think that sort of thing is possible? I mean, those apps, I mean, I've used quite a few audio apps. I've used Reaper, Audacity, GarageBand. They're really complex apps, really, especially if you're just trying to do the basic stuff. So do you think it is possible for it to interact with something that complex and do what it needs to do?
I feel like I'm gonna oversell it. I know people have tried. I haven't actually used the apps that much myself, so it's hard for me to really to say. But I think it's important to be able to focus on that. I think another area where this is important is a lot of these music production apps are highly visual. So like plugins, for example, I think, it might have an image of an amp that you have to tune the dials on your screen. And a lot of the times that's just not accessible at all. So I think that the point of having like this AI-powered assistant is to be able to handle that type of interaction for the user. So I think it's definitely on the list of things that I want this to do. I'm not necessarily going to be able to say that this is what it can do, but hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure having you on. If people want to give this a go, if people want to get in contact with you or try it out, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, so the Mac version is available on my website at typeahead.ai. People can feel free to email me at jeff@typeahead.ai. And there's a email sign up on the website. So if you'd like to hear more about the Windows development, and I can send out updates on there. So that'd be the best way to contact me.
Okay, and is there a cost to this or is it a free app at the minute?
At the minute, it's free. I'm still talking to people to do price discovery, but people can feel free to try it out. And see what they think.
Okay, fantastic. Well, if you've tried it, let us know. And of course, get in touch with Jeff as well, because that feedback is so crucial. Jeff Harrer, developer of Type Ahead, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Callum. It was really great.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Welcome to the final part of the Getting Started with VoiceOver series here on Tech Talk. And to finish off this particular series, we will look at doing a bit of work with text. So we will look at reading text in text boxes, doing some text editing, copying and pasting, and quickly mention a few different typing methods and also how to copy text in two different ways. So we will look at copying using the rotor once you've selected some text. But if you want to copy a large bit of text in one go, there is also another handy gesture to use, which I will show you. So first of all, let's show you a very simple way to read a lot of the screen automatically. Now, this command can be done anywhere, and all it simply will do is read the screen automatically without you having to swipe left or right or up or down. It's not something that I use often, but I think it's a good command to be aware of.
Utilities folder.
So I'm currently on the utilities folder, and what I'm going to do is get VoiceOver to read from that point and carry on reading the entire screen. And I'll do this by swiping up with two fingers and have a listen to what VoiceOver does.
Utilities folder, 33 apps, one new item. Productivity folder, 16 apps, 235 new items. Social folder, 17 apps, 481 new items. Games folder, 23 apps, 16 new items. Entertainment folder, 21 apps.
So I've done a single tap with two fingers to silence the speech for it to stop reading. I'm going to do the single tap with two fingers again.
Two new items. Online stores folder, 17 apps, 5 new items.
So that gesture does stop and start speech when it comes to reading. So that's a quite handy little command. As I've said, not something that people use often, but it's good to be aware of because sometimes you might just find it very useful if you want to read, for example, a large news story and you just want it to read without you having to constantly swipe through the screen. Next, we will look at text boxes. Here we go. We are in notes and I've written a practice note and I will swipe to the right to the text field for VoiceOver to read this note for us.
Note. Text field is editing. This is a Tech Talk demonstration note. The purpose of it is to show how to do text editing with the Apple screen, reader, voiceover, word mode, insertion point at start. Actions available.
So there we go. It has read us this entire practice note I've made. There was also an odd punctuation mark inserted there, where really it shouldn't be. We will correct that when I show you text editing. So there are a few ways you can read this text field. Now, we've looked at some of these commands in our Using Rota episode, where you can read by words and by characters. So we will not go through that extensively, but just so you know that this also applies in text fields. And going by characters and words is quite important when we do text editing. You can also read by lines, and this is also in the Rota. So
characters, words, text select, speaking rate, lines, sound, lines.
I have lines here, so I'm going to swipe down with one finger.
This is a Tech Talk demonstration note. Space. The purpose of it is to show how to do text editing with the Apple screen, reader, voiceover.
So there we go. There's two lines of text I've created, and if I swipe back up, I can simply go backwards through the lines.
The purpose of it is to this is a Tech Talk demo.
So I've taken us back to the top of the text field. Now, next thing I'm going to show you is text selection. Now, in the olden days, selecting text with voiceover was quite tricky. The way you had to do it was a bit convoluted. You sort of had to move two fingers around, and it wasn't easy. But for a good few years now, Apple have made text selection a lot easier, and I'm going to show you how this works. So I will use the rotor again.
Speaking rate, text selection.
I will swipe up or down to show you what you get here. So let's swipe down.
Word selection.
So you've got word selections. You can select by words.
Line selection. Page selection. Select all.
Or you can select all.
Character selection.
Or we're back to character selection. What we're going to do is word selection.
Word selection.
Now, depending in which direction you want to select text will depend which way you swipe. So I'm going to swipe to the right because I want to select text to the right.
This selected is selected. A selected.
So as you've heard, it has selected three words, and I'm going to now press the delete key on the keyboard.
Delete. Selection deleted. This is a...
And it's deleted it. Now let's see what it sounds like.
No. Format. Note. Text field. Is editing. Tech Talk demonstration note. The purpose of it is to show how to do text editing with the Apple screen, reader, voiceover. Insertion point at start.
A simple way to do text selecting and deleting, which is quite handy and I think much simpler than the old way used to be. So we will do some text editing now. And as you've heard, there's a strange punctuation mark after the word screen. So between the word screen and reader, which we don't really need. So what we will do is navigate with the rotor using words to get to the end of the word screen and remove the punctuation mark.
Text selection. Words. Tech. Talk. Demonstration. Note. Full stop. Space. The. Purpose. Off. It. Is. To. Space. How. To. Do. Text. Editing. With. The. Apple. Screen. Comma.
So there we go. You've heard screen, comma. Now we don't need that comma. And what I can do now is find the delete key on the on-screen keyboard. And once I find it, I will lift my finger to press it.
Delete. Comma.
There we go. Now let's have a listen to what this note sounds like with that punctuation mark removed.
The 20th note, text field, is editing. Tech Talk demonstration note. The purpose of it is to show how to do text editing with the Apple screen reader, voiceover, word mode, insertion point between screen and reader, at the 105th position. Actions available.
So there we go. It's deleted it. It sounds a lot nicer. And it has also told you where the insertion point is if you want to start typing. Now let's talk typing. There's a few ways of typing, depending what you prefer. You can type on the on-screen keyboard, and there are two ways of doing it. One of them is the standard typing mode, where you can move your finger around the screen and find the key on the keyboard and lift your finger and double tap the screen to type it. Or you can swipe through the keys on the keyboard using the left and right one-finger swipe gesture, and then double tap once you find the key you want. That is a good method for beginners. When it comes to typing, the next method, which is the one I use quite often, is touch typing. And this is where you move your finger around the on-screen keyboard. And as soon as you hear the key that you want to press, all you do is simply lift your finger. So that is the touch typing method, which once you get comfortable with typing on the screen and you know the rough layout of the keys on the keyboard, you will probably be using that method. But equally, the key is you use the method that's most comfortable for you. There is, of course, also dictation, where you can dictate text and type it that way. Now, as we know, that's not going to always be perfect. It might not always get it right, or it might insert random punctuation marks, because now dictation can insert punctuation without you having to dictate it. So what we are going to do is dictate some text, and I'll take us back to the beginning.
Format, note, text.
So this is the text field. Now, you can double tap on this text field to move your insertion point from the start of the text to the end.
Insertion point at start.
So there we go. It puts us at the start. And what I want to type is I want to add the three words we have deleted. So this is A. And I'm going to dictate this. So I'm going to double tap the screen with two fingers. This is A.
Inserted this is A. Misspelled words, actions, activate, characters.
And I'm going to now check if it's done it correctly.
T, E, C, E, T, space, A, space, words, is, this, is, A.
So there we go, it has done it. Now you can also connect a Bluetooth keyboard and type text in using the physical keyboard, which again, some people prefer, or you can even connect a Braille display or the Able One. Now we will look at copying text. And there's two ways of doing it. There's one where you select the text and use the rotor to copy the text, which is the best way if you're going to copy something specific. So I will select some text using the rotor.
Text speaking rate. Text select line selection. Word selection. Text talk. Demonstration. Selected.
So we have selected that. I'm now going to find edit in the rotor, which appears when you are in a text field.
Words, characters, actions, misspelled words, edit.
So we are at edit. I'm going to take you through what you can do here.
Cut.
So you can cut the text. I'm swiping down with one finger.
Paste. Look up. Share. Undo. Make checklist. Set bold. Set italic. Set underline. Set strike through. Increase indentation. Decrease indentation. Copy. Cut.
So you can do a few different things to that text. I'm going to move my finger back up.
Copy.
And copy.
Tech talk demonstration. Copied.
And it's copied that text. And I can now navigate to another text field somewhere. Use the same method to paste the text, because you've heard paste as one of the options. So there we go. That's simple bits of text editing. I'm going to show you one little trick to copy large bits of text in one go, which can be sometimes quite useful if it is a large bit of text that you wish to copy. So let's go to the Connect Radio website. So I put us on the Connect Radio schedule webpage, and let's say someone has asked me what the description of Tech Talk is. We're going to try and copy that. So I'm going to find the Tech Talk heading.
Form controls. Headings. 8. Highlight. 9. The Daily. 12. Focus. 13. Tech Talk. Heading level 2.
So there's Tech Talk. Now I'm going to swipe to the right to get to the description.
The best tech for the blind and partially sighted.
There we go. Nice and simple description. Now, I don't really want to select word by word. I want to copy it all, the whole description. There is a gesture, and the original gesture requires a few fingers, but you can change that in settings if you prefer. But this gesture is a three-finger quadruple tap. So basically tapping four times with three fingers. Let's see what happens.
The best tech for the blind and partially sighted, copied to clipboard.
So it's copied the whole text. Now, this is a function that is called copy last spoken phrase by VoiceOver. So if you want to copy what VoiceOver just said, this particular gesture is very useful. And I use that quite a lot. Yes, it's a very specific copy command, because it only works really if you want to copy the whole piece of text. If you want to copy a certain section, this command might not always work, because if you copy the whole thing but you only want a little bit, you will then have to go and delete it, or delete what you want to delete. So it depends what works for you, but I think that's quite a handy command to have. That is a little bite-sized version of what you can do with text when it comes to VoiceOver. If you have any more questions or you want some things demonstrated in more detail, of course, reach out to us. It's that email address. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we will be more than happy to expand on various things we have covered in this voiceover series if you want more detail. But this is the last episode in the series, so I hope you have enjoyed it. And drop us an email if you want more. We will probably have another similar series in the future here on Tech Talk.
We are at the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate your company. If you like what you heard, then please do spread it and share it on your networks. We always appreciate that. And tune in next time when we'll be bringing you all the latest from the Tech for Life Fair taking place in Belfast. That's next time here on Tech Talk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, and Hubert Pavarkovich. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.